In a few minutes, this woman will be dead. The question is, who killed her? Was it Carson McKell, the philandering financier?
I'm a married man.
Marion McKell, the jealous wife.
She was my rival.
Tom, the son with a dangerous temper.
Tell him that he's innocent.
The radio mystery star.
The man we've been looking for is you.
The ambitious secretary. The chauffeur. The delivery boy. Match wits with Ellery Queen and see if you can guess who done it.
Presentation, Ellery Queen, starring Jim Hutton and David Wayne.
Hello everyone, it's Dan. That was the opening narration and opening credits for an NBC mystery movie that aired March 23rd, 1975, Ellery Queen, Too Many Suspects. Oh boy. Directed by David Green, produced and written by Richard Levinson and William Link from an Ellery Queen novel. Jim Hutton plays Ellery Queen. David Wayne is Inspector Richard Queen. Ray Milland, Carson McKell, Kim Hunter, Marion McKell, Monty Markham, Tom McKell, John Hillerman, Simon Brimmer, John Larch, District Attorney, Tim O'Connor, Ben Watterson, Nancy Mehta, Monica Gray. Let's see who else we have. Gail Strickland is Gail Stevens. Sergeant Veely, the great Sergeant Veely. Tom Reese, Ramon, Vic Mojica. A lot of other folks in there, too. It's a great show that aired for one full season. This is the TV movie that is about 6 months before the hour-long show begins proper. And I'm going to do everything I can in this to not give away who the killer is. The point of our discussions of the Ellery Queen Mysteries, which is one of my wife and I's favorite shows, is that we don't want to give away the killer. So I'm going to give you a very brief rundown of what happens in Too Many Suspects. Basically, it's 1947, New York City. It's the evening. I forget what time it is. It's like 10:30 p.m. A woman is dying. She's been shot. She's in the penthouse of a super ritzy apartment. Her TV is on, showing news, and she drags herself across the floor and with her last dying moment pulls two cords out of the wall, turning off the TV, turning off a clock. Well, Ellery, who is first seen sleeping, actually, he's seen sleeping in Simon Brimmer, the casebook of Simon Brimmer. Simon Brimmer is played by John Hillerman, and he's played the way John Hillerman plays all his characters, very haughty and feels like he's superior to everyone else. And he's called Ellery down to watch a recording of one of his radio shows and wants to buy Ellery's casebook, more or less. And Ellery says no, but gets a call from his dad saying there's a big murder going on and Ellery has to go someplace. So Simon kind of begins to look into it too. And they learn that the dead woman was Monica Gray, who was a big fashion designer. And there's a long sequence in her apartment when Ellery is kind of deducing things and looking at this and coming up with all sorts of great clues. And eventually, Carson McKell, played by Ray Milland, who is a philanthropist and financier, is arrested. And it turns out he was having an affair with Monica, and the gun that shot her was his, registered to his name, and he doesn't have an alibi. Well, the way the story goes is, from Too Many Suspects, is that after a while, Ellery gets Carson free. And then another member of the family is arrested. They get free. Another member of the family is arrested. They get free. Someone else is arrested. Did they do it? Someone else. Did they do it? What's going on? And then in the end, it all sort of convenes with Ellery very grandly declaring who the killer is. Now, I'm stopping my very brief synopsis there because I don't want to give anything away, but I will say this. As we discuss the episode, keep in mind that the killer may be someone who was arrested and freed. They may also be someone who wasn't. Everything's up in the air. If you've ever read an Ellery Queen novel, everything is up in the air until more or less the last chapter. So don't let anything fool you about what's going on, and don't think that we're going to give it away. So I'm going to go from my back room where I'm recording this little bit and hop on over to the living room. Here we go.
The living room welcomes you.
I don't know if you recognize that voice, but that's my sweet wife, Madeline.
Hey,
how are you, babe?
I'm happy to be back.
Yeah.
I've missed you.
Yes. And
he's just been in the back room recording.
Yes.
Since we did our last Cobra episode. You look good. Your beard got really long.
I lost a bunch of weight, too, which is good. I'm feeling more like
40-some odd pounds.
Yes. I'm feeling like Michael Dudikoff.
Yeah.
I could beat the crap out of any random squirrel.
And just between me and you, listener, he looks pretty... Don't let it go to his head, though. You look nice.
Thank you. Oh, okay. So we are here, as I said, what you just listened to.
In the back room.
The Ellery Queen. So, too many suspects.
Too many, Dan.
And it kind of is, actually.
Based on the novel.
Yeah, it's based on the novel. Was it the
four-sided triangle?
Yep, I've got it right here.
Is that a square?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a square. I don't know
what they're up to.
Yeah. Based on the... Thanks, babe. Wink, wonk. Based on the novel, The Fourth Side of the Triangle. And the thing about the novel is I've read the novel, and Levinson and Link really...
Capture?
Do it.
Yeah.
Do it. I mean, they do it. And the tricky thing about how they do it is it's... I'm going to refer it to... Murder on the Orient Express, which is about to come out in a new big screen adaptation. Mm-hmm. And you all might know from the Sidney Lumet, Serpico, his Murder on the Orient Express in the mid-70s, and about 10 years ago, David Suchet? He was into Doctor Who. He did a Poirot Murder on the Orient Express, which I watched a year and a half ago. And the problem with Murder on the Orient Express is if you adapt it directly...
I just say, this guy gets skinny and all of a sudden he has a problem with Murder on the Orient Express. What is happening?
I'm having a big sip of water and ignoring that last statement.
Mm-hmm. 0 points for water.
0 points. I'm on the Weight Watchers, folks. Okay, so here we go.
What's that, Skinny Dan?
Here's the thing.
What's the problem with Murder on the Orient Express?
No. There's no problem with Murder. The Murder on the Orient Express is one of the best mystery novels ever. But... it's a mystery novel, which means that if you've seen Sidney Lumet's adaptation, what happens is you get this gorgeous opening sequence, and this is nothing to do with Ellery Queen. We'll get to it in a moment, because this is one problem I have with this episode. I love this episode. It begins with this gorgeous sequence where they bring all this food on and everything, and they're all these big name stars. And the first like 20 minutes to half an hour is all these great stars, and all these, like, you look out the window and all these locations are flashing by. And Albert Finney?
Yeah.
Poirot? Yeah. He's so great. But then what happens is when they all wake up the next morning and the train is now stuck in the snow in one location and someone's dead, the rest of the movie is him going from car to car with the same location behind them, interviewing them. And so the entire rest of the movie is just one person talking to another person in a very, like, a bathroom size enclosed space. And that's the tricky thing with Murder on the Orient Express. It's a novel. It's not a movie. And so when he adapted it to... they did a little better with the Suchet version. They souped it up a little. But it's tricky. And there is a tricky thing with the way this novel, Fourth Side of the Triangle, works. Because it's not written like, we're going to... I hope someone makes this a movie. It's not written. Most of the Ellery Queen, the early Ellery Queens, are not written that way. They're written as novels. And to make them into movies, you have to adjust them in ways that don't work for the novel. So,
and Dan, I say this with all the love in my heart. Are you done?
I'm done. I'm all done. I'm sorry. Okay, so let's dive in. So let's. Yeah. So let's go through this.
What makes a great novel doesn't always make a great
Filmed experience. Exactly. Yes. Yes. So I'm sorry. That went a little too long for a minisode.
Yeah. It's the hunger, people. It's the hunger that makes them go on. Like
we
got.
I will say the joy of this is we have a lot of notes.
We do. I was so excited to be back. I thought, I really want to do it right this time, take notes. So I took like 3 pages of notes on the first 5 pages, and then I thought, I can't really pay attention to this and take notes. I have it in a book that says notebook.
Yes. Yeah, so
in case
her
you
notes...
get confused, you're like, is this the Bible? Oh, no, it's my Ellery Queen notes.
Her notes.
Is this War and Peace? No, it's my notebook.
Oh, her notes are more official than mine because mine are written a company named General Data from Cincinnati, where I work, they bill us, and I happen to print out an invoice.
Now, so I just got this cute little notebook.
So here we go.
Okay. So we begin. We do this, and now we're gonna do it. We're gonna focus.
I may have overdone it on my explanation, but I think,
don't explain your explanation now.
Oh my gosh, I'm gonna do that.
I'm gonna start with something. I noticed the theme music is different in the beginning of this episode.
It is. It is.
Is there a slide whistle in there? Am I wrong? Did I hear like a...
There is a slide whistle. There is a slide whistle.
I expect somebody to come... Yeah. Slipping through Jell-O.
It's here's the thing. The actual theme for the show. Yeah, that's it. Is more sort of 40s kind of 40s 50s.
And it's at the end of the episode they play that theme.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
I know that because I wrote it in my notebook.
Yes. So what it is? This was the fourth season of NBC Mystery Movie, and this was NBC Mystery Movie had 2 nights, I think, at this time. And I think one of the other stations had also a Mystery Movie. This was the height of TV movies and craziness. And I say craziness, being a made-for-TV mayhem show, in the best possible way. So this season was Columbo, McMillan and Wife, and McCloud.
McCloud!
So it was McMillan and Wife, 4th season, Columbo, 4th season, McCloud, 5th season, because it was on 4-1, the Umbrella anthology program from the year before when it premiered. And what they would do is, when they didn't have a regular running show as the 4th show, like Heck Ramsey or Quincy or Lonigan's Rabbi or Spoon Sisters.
Beep, beep, beep. That's me backing up. Could you explain Lonigan's Rabbi?
Lanigan's Rabbi.
Lanigan's?
It's Lanigan. It might be Lanigan's. It was based on... There were a series of mystery novels like the Day the Rabbi Went to Dinner.
Sure.
The Day the Rabbi... Yeah.
Sunday the Rabbi saw red.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was like Monday
the
Rabbi went over here.
Performed a bris. Yep. Yeah.
And Art Carney was the cop, and I don't remember who was the rabbi. Do you remember Kentucky Fried Movie? Or do you remember, what is that one MST episode where they say, he's the cop, and he's the rabbi. They're cops, except for the rabbi. I don't remember what episode that is, but it's sort of that sort of thing. Like Kentucky Fried Movie did the Cleopatra's... Oh crap! I forget what that there's a fake preview in Kentucky Fried Movie where it's like she's like Pam Grier and he's a rabbi and they're in bed together.
Oh,
and she's topless and gorgeous, and he's like a 60-year-old rabbi with the Torah in front of him. You know, it's like it's crazy, but it's like Lanigan's Rabbi was based on that series of books, Saturday the Rabbi Had Bread or something like that. And That was another one of them.
And very those... boring novel.
And yeah,
that particular one, they really go into detail about the loaf. Oh, I think it was rye.
God, and the problem was they went back to judges and went through all the laws. Mm-hmm. Shellfish, you know, they took 10 minutes on shellfish, and mm-hmm. it was like, I'm not into that.
Said we were going to be good, and we were going to move it along, but then you start throwing in things like Lanigan's Rabbi, and I to ask about an Irish-sounding name and a rabbi. What's going on here?
That's the way that works.
I thought, is this about a little-known Irish-Jewish settlement somewhere?
Where would that be?
I don't know.
Minnesota or something? Is that a...
Dublin.
Dublin. Is it
Dublin? I don't know.
So what they would do is when they
did... To all our Irish-Jewish listeners, educate us.
Please tell us what's going on. Please.
Yeah.
So when they didn't have a regular series, like Heck Ramsey mm-hmm. ran for two years.
They plugged in one of these fellas.
They plugged in a movie of the week. Mm-hmm. And so this was the same month where the, and this will be more interesting later, where the, I'm just going
to
say.
He always says that to me.
I'm gonna say it now so I remember it because I have a note. The Columbo episode playback with Gina Rowlands in the wheelchair,
oh, yeah.
where the house is super closed caption, not closed caption, camera
automated,
yeah, there are all those cameras, and the ending of the episode is basically sitting there watching a video. And you sit there watching it going, okay, we watched this at the beginning. What did we miss?
Right.
And Columbo's standing there going, you missed something. And the killer, who we obviously already know who it is going, I missed something. And you sit there going, what is it?
What is it?
It's like the Robert Culp episode where he's the sports manager. And Columbo puts on the audio, the tape. I'm not going to ruin it, but I forget. What that one is called, but it's he kills someone with an ice cream truck. Do you remember? From Quantum Leap.
He kills Dean Stockwell.
Yes, he kills Dean Stockwell with an icicle. You remember?
Oh, an icicle. I was going with ice cream truck.
He has an ice cream truck, but there's a kill, and it's one of those things where you see everything happening, but then at the end of the episode, they play it in a way where you sit there going, okay,
I missed something.
And that's the way this episode ends. Here's the thing, folks. We're not going to give away the ending of this episode.
We will not tell you who the killer is.
No, this is not about spoilers. This one's not about spoilers.
Even a little bit.
So let's
We'll lay some ground rules. I think there's only one. Or just, I don't know if it's a ground rule so much, but that just because somebody's dismissed by the police does not mean that they're no longer vying for the position of murderer.
Yes, exactly. If you've read Ellery Queen novels, people are brought up as killers and dismissed early on, mm-hmm. but are still eligible in the end.
Yes.
Until Ellery gives his final look at the camera and says, is this person the killer? Is this person the killer?
Is that the first show to do that, where somebody addressed the audience directly? I mean, except for...
Well, George Burns.
Well, I mean like a drama.
I think so, possibly. Yes, I'd have to look into that.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the first one I know of, really, where the thing is at the beginning of the episode, the voiceover guy says, "This woman's heard it, so you don't
in
need
a few
to."
Minutes,
yes, exactly.
This woman will be dead.
Like, yes, so you heard it already. Come on, tell
you
her.
You know.
But right before the closing sequence, Ellery looks at us in every single... And I love this so... I love Jim Hutton so much. I just adore him.
Do you know who the killer is?
And he looks at us and says, do you know who it is? Is it this person? Is it this person? Maybe you didn't see it. Or maybe I didn't see it.
He's so kind. He says, well, you've probably figured it out by now. And
yes.
I've never figured it out by now, usually.
And as the episodes go on, the... where he looks becomes more and more elaborate. This
mm-hmm.
one, he just turns and looks at us. And it's so fun. It's so fun because, you know what? When we talk about the first episode, the Auld Lang Syne episode, which is one of my all-time favorite episodes of anything anywhere.
Crankiest man ever.
Yes, we will discuss where the show came from, how the show evolved, and that kind of thing. Right now, we're just talking about the episode, but we're...
And look at us. We haven't even gotten to the beginning. We talked about the theme. So, it's 1947.
It's 1947, and it's New York television has begun.
It's the exciting new medium of television.
Yes. And so it begins with a woman crawling along the floor who is... And we see a shape behind glass block. Oh, freaking glass block. Ugh! I used to work at a hardware store. Everyone hated glass block. It's the block of evil. And so you see a figure go behind this glass block, and this lovely woman is dragging herself along the ground, and there is a TV news and weather is showing itself on here. And here's the thing,
Truman's
folks.
Going to be in New York tomorrow.
Yes,
I wrote that in my notebook.
Yes, oh my gosh, yeah.
They go to the weather report, and we see this woman crawling. Before this, we've heard the sound of a gunshot.
Yes, we heard the sound of a gunshot, and they go to the weather. And as the weather begins, she grabs two plugs on her wall. Now, in 1939, Christmas Story, Ralphie's family had 400 plugs.
We've lost them again.
400 plugs in the wall. She only has two.
Two.
Which means that in 47, things are... You have more
it's
plugs.
It's a simpler time.
She is in a penthouse in a Manhattan apartment, so yes. She probably has more money than Ralphie's family. So she pulls these out, and the TV goes off, and the clock stops. It's like, oh my gosh.
And then we cut to our friend, Simon Brimmer.
Simon Brimmer.
Who's played by John...
Hillerman.
Hillerman. Yeah, who was on Magnum P.I.
If you watch Magnum P.I., he's the guy who's in charge of... I've only watched a few... Sorry, Amanda. I've only watched a few episodes
He's also, I'm sure, the person upon whom Stewie from Family Guy was based.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Take Stewie's head and you turn it the other way...
Yes. Because he's not quite English... But he's like Vincent Price. He's not quite English.
Yeah, he has
that. But he's almost English.
Is there an American version of received pronunciation?
Is that like the further you go up in New England? Like you're from Connecticut, yeah. But you go up further. New Hampshire.
Vermont,
Maine. Is it the top of Maine?
Well, I was out in the... You don't have an answering machine. No, it's not. It's not New England. It's Philadelphia. You know, like it's Catherine Hepburn.
Okay. Oh, is that Philadelphia?
Old money,
okay, Philadelphia
mainline
story. Okay.
Sort of accent, I think.
Okay.
He's persnickety. What can I say?
Yes, he has a show, the Simon Brimmer Show of Shows.
It's called. Yes. Oh, I thought I wrote that down. See, this is where things started to go wrong for me.
No. Here's a point where
The Casebook of Simon
the
Brimmer.
The Familiar Door.
Is what it's
Wait
called. The Casebook of Simon
the
Brimmer.
The Casebook of Simon Brimmer. He has a radio show. This is 47. Mm-hmm. This is 5 or 6 years before TV overtakes radio. So radio
is the thing.
So they're
doing a whole fun mystery story,
yeah,
and there's someone doing the sound effects.
Sound effects, and he's so great. The guy doing the sound effects like gives it his all.
Yeah, he's almost Harvey Keitel, right? No, that's the other voiceover guy. I called him almost Harvey Keitel, although he looks older than Harvey Keitel is now, and this was in the
70s. But the sound guy...
Maybe he's like his great uncle.
Yes, exactly.
The sound guy's great. Here's a sound effect that surprised me. He opens his medicine bag.
He opens a medicine bag. And he like, because he's on, you know, it's he's doing the sound. So it's like when Simon gets in a fight with the killer and he has to do sound effects of punching and he has to do sound effects. He's on like a wooden floor. Yeah. It's so much fun.
Maybe we could develop a sound effects workout.
Oh, my gosh. Well, here's the thing, folks. This show is set in the 1947.
Oh, no. Open the medicine bag for seven.
There's no reason why we can't.
Five. Four. Oh, three. You got this. Two. Push it. One.
Push it.
Way to go.
And it's so fun.
Shoot the gun.
It's so fun because he shoots, like, blanks into the... I love he shoots blanks into the scenes.
He kind of has a fight with himself.
He has a fight. And I always think... How many blanks are in the ceilings of studios in L.A., Chicago, and New York that they just, like, they had to fire? It's so much fun because he does this, and it's, you know, I love old-time radio. I've loved it since like 81, 82 when I was like 9 years old. I love the theater of the imagination. Bob and Ray are still my favorites, along with Vic and Sade.
Wonderful.
And Dragnet, the original Dragnet. But Bob and Ray are sort of spoofing it. But Simon Brimmer's really deep into... He is the master detective who is solving all these crimes.
Yes, he fancies himself master detective. And but he wears a very jaunty carnation on his lapel.
Yes, he does. But the thing is, he is literally just an actor, and I don't mean to denigrate.
Excuse me?
I'm sorry.
Could you rephrase that, please?
I just denigrated. No, he is just...
He's not a detective.
He's not a detective.
He's an entertainer.
And the thing about Ellery is it's like Simon is an entertainer slash actor slash wants to be detective who never gets anything right as we go through the series. Whereas Ellery is an author slash detective who gets everything right.
That's why they named the show after him.
Yes. The Simon Brimmer Mysteries would have ran for 13 episodes. Mm-hmm. And we'd still be talking about it.
Yeah,
but it wouldn't be as
wrong.
But so Simon at the end of the episode, he goes up to the booth, and Ellery is asleep.
And this is our radio show episode.
Yes.
Right. Oh yeah. Let's get to Ellery. How long have we been talking? We said we were only going to talk for 20 minutes.
20 minutes.
And we haven't even gotten to our main character.
This will probably be about an hour long, folks. Okay. I apologize. But
so we get to Ellery, who's asleep.
He's asleep, and he's got
mismatched socks on.
He's got mismatched socks and great shoes, and he's got a great outfit and a great hat.
Yeah, he's tired. He's sleeping.
Yes, it's Jim Hutton, Timothy Hutton's dad. You know him from Where the Boys Are, a ton of films in the 60s.
He was so good in this.
With Paul Apprentice. A lot of films with Paul Apprentice. He was in Psychic Killer, which Vinegar Syndrome released on Blu-ray a couple of months ago. He's so great. He died in like 80 or 79 or 80, right before Timothy Hutton won his Oscar for Ordinary People, which is a heartbreaker because he's so good He's like,
and Timothy Hutton's so good.
I
think they must have the so good gene.
Here's the thing.
They're just like so incredibly watchable, and I don't know. I love them both.
Yes, here's the thing. I'm working on the rules of this podcast to get the Nero Wolfe mysteries into this, which Maury Chaykin and Timothy Hutton are in, which had more or less two full-ish seasons, so it doesn't quite get in here, but God, it's a good show.
So good.
It's like Ellery Queen, and then 15 years later, his son did a detective show that is as good. At some points, better. Ellery Queen, I rate them on the same level, I think. This is not the time to go into those charts. But yeah, so Jim Hutton is Ellery Queen. He wakes up and he's been asleep. He's working on his book. And
he's got a deadline. And Simon has a proposition for him.
Yes, and Simon basically says, I want to purchase your case files. And I don't know, I always felt like Ellery made up his stories as he went along. That he didn't have case files per se.
He wants Ellery to sell him his stories and his byline.
Yes, exactly. And your stories will become my stories. And Ellery says no. And Ellery... I have a note here. He's snoozing.
Then the phone rings.
Yeah, the phone rings, and his dad has called him.
His dad, who is?
David Wayne.
But also, what does his dad do? What does Mr. Queen do?
He's Digger Barnes on Dallas, but he's also Detective... Is it Inspector? Inspector Queen.
Inspector Queen.
So he's head of homicide.
Dad's
in New York
a legit
City.
Detective so, in New York City.
So this is
that a match made in heaven or what?
Because the books are so great when they do this because they're so good.
So can I tell you one of my favorite lines?
Yes.
This isn't it, but it's the setup for it. So when Ellery says, I'm not going to sell you my story, Simon Brimmer says, you know you're making a mistake.
Yeah.
And Ellery says, oh, probably. I make a lot of them. He's very, I love that.
Exactly.
So much.
Yeah.
It's a good way to think about mistakes. Sure, you know.
Yeah, I do. I
it reminds
do it a lot.
Me of my favorite line from Sondheim in Sunday in the Park with George.
Yes.
When Dot sings, "The choice may have been mistaken. The choosing was,
not.
You have to move on."
Yes.
I love that so much.
Oh, gosh, I love Sunday
so
in the Park.
That seemed
so much.
To embody yeah. that, yep. you know, just, yep. Yeah, maybe it's a mistake, but I have to make a decision, and I say no.
Yep, and the thing is, the season, as we watch it, will prove Ellery correct. And
yes.
And so...
He knows these stories are his.
Yeah, so he leaves. He stumbles over some things as he leaves the studios. This is played
He's
down...
He's a little absent-minded, you'll come to discover.
He is a bit absent-minded. They play it down a bit when the actual series begins. This is a very much a...
He's more not so much absent-minded as single-minded. He's working on something...
He's focused.
Where his focus
he's like is. He's like freaking Sherlock Holmes or Poirot or Miss Marple or any of the greats.
Or me when I'm playing Angry Birds.
My wife when she's playing Angry Birds, or me when I'm
watching Doctor Who.
Doctor Who. When I'm watching an episode of Doctor Who, you don't get in there.
You don't
get in there.
It is just like give me a just fortress, baby.
Just give me my 25 minutes or 50 minutes.
I do.
All right. So he goes to.
The scene of the crime.
The scene of the crime. And yes,
Monica Gray.
And all the cops are there and they're mulling around. We meet Inspector Queen. Who's David Wayne, who I love so much. He's so good.
So good. And they are so good together. The relationship between the two of them, father, son, it's just...
I mean,
delicious.
And you know,
I
David
can't believe
Wayne.
I use that word, but it's really good.
It really is. They're like immediately. They're perfect, and the fact that we get an entire season of a television show where they're this perfect, like...
And if you know these two actors, they look nothing alike. Jim Hutton's super tall, David Wayne's small. I mean,
yes, David Wayne...
You think Ellery's mom must have been like a 7-foot
who was,
tall
yeah,
beauty.
Who was the mom? I don't think we ever actually, in the books
an
or
Amazonian
anything, we actually
beauty.
Really learned, like, her mom was like Gal Gadot or something like that, you know, something. She, Wonder Woman was in the 40s, so, you know, it was like something like that.
David Wayne wishes.
Oh, my gosh. Well, wow. David Wayne, of course, you know, he was Digger Barnes, the initial Digger Barnes. I think Keenan Wynn replaced him as Dallas went along. We also know him from, he's in that great, what's that flipping? He was in that Twilight Zone episode where he plays the guy who the devil makes him immortal. Oh, flip. I forget the name of the episode. Yeah. But he was also the Mad Hatter on Batman.
Yes. That's...
And he does the Batman. He does accent like, no, that's not quite it. But he does like a strange, lispy, weird accent on it where it's like, I don't know what the hell he's doing, but it's so good. It's so
good.
The
choice may have been mistaken.
The choosing was not. He got it. So here we are.
So Monica Gray, let me tell you a little bit about her. This is what we know. She's a top fashion designer and puzzles. She loves them.
She loves puzzles.
He notices like a crossword. This is he. I mean, Ellery notices a crossword dictionary. Also, we know she's attractive and vain.
Yes.
And Inspector Queen says, how do you know she's vain? And Mallory. Remember Mallory? He was part Mallory from Facts of Life. From
Mallory
from the Michael J. Fox show. What
Would
we
family
do?
Ties.
Family Ties. Mallory and Ellery. That was his mother. Mallory Queen.
Can I just say what you're doing? On a recent Minute to Dismember, I did this where... I did Monica Gray and Ellery. Monica and Ellery. Mallory. We're running so fast to do our point, which is fine, but we're running so fast to do our point that we take the word at the beginning of the point, the word in the middle of the point, and we I do that all the time. So that's fun. So that's what we did.
So Ellery says she's vain because how many people keep a framed picture of themselves?
Yes.
I thought that was a good observation.
That was a very good observation.
I only have three framed pictures of myself.
Oh.
No. Well, you have one on your nightstand.
I have a picture of you. I don't have any pictures. I think I had a problem with my family where they kind of threw out all the pictures of me. early on before my wife. My wife, sorry. But is that a Freudian slip? I don't know. Before I'm looking at my wife though. So does that my mom remarried and all the pictures prior to my mom remarrying got lost. I put those in quotes, which is too bad. So I have I have trouble getting pictures of myself.
Do you have a few cuties of you when you're a kid?
Oh yes, from our wedding and stuff. So yeah.
Maybe
so.
I'll get. You know how they do the aging photos of children? Maybe I'll get a regressive photo.
Do you need to say that I'm missing? Because I'd hate to do that. I've gone missing, and
here's what he looked like as a baby. Oh,
that would be a heartbreaker.
You're not going to be missing.
Oh, I'm not.
Please don't.
I'm not.
You do leave awfully early for work. It does concern me sometimes.
I do. So Ellery...
We find some of her collections, too. She calls her collections. Last year's was Lady Dulcia. There's the Lady Ruth, the Lady Norma.
Lady Thelma.
Thelma.
Mm-hmm. And those are the previous... those are what she calls her collections of her stuff. And Ellery kind of sits in front of the TV and kind of thinks on why did she pull out the two cords?
Right.
And he goes on for a while. Was it meant to be this? Was it meant to be that? Ding dong, ding dong. And it goes on for a while. And then he eventually stands up.
It's some sort of dying clue.
Yes. And eventually he stands up and he says, Dad, I know what's going on. You called me here to bring me in on this. You know that I need to finish my book.
Mm-hmm.
I'm out of here. And he leaves. And we get this.
Oh, gee, that's too bad, Inspector. I thought you had him out of the water and into the boat.
I was just thinking.
Yes?
No headway on the dying clue, but I'm sure you picked up the other information.
What information?
Oh, you know, the obvious things. The fact that she's single, yet she had a man coming here on a more or less regular basis. A pipe smoker, by the way. Oh, excuse me just a minute, Dad.
I should have the autopsy completed by morning. The time of death checks out with the clock.
Huh?
Never mind, I'll give you a call.
I thought so. He was a recent visitor, about medium size.
Well, while you're at it, why don't you tell us the color of his eyes?
Oh, I can't do that, but I can tell you his initials.
His initials?
All right, let's start at the beginning. She's single because I saw her name in the penthouse mailbox when I came in downstairs. Miss Monica Gray. By the way, the fact that this is a recent building is unfortunate.
Why?
It has these new self-service elevators. No elevator operator to see who comes and goes.
Get to the man.
A pipe holder. Now, unless she smoked a pipe, she probably kept it here for someone who did. When I was in the bedroom, I looked in the closet, and there's a smoking jacket in there, medium size.
Feely.
Tobacco crumbs in the pocket, not stale. So he was here recently.
And his initials?
CM, Inspector.
Anything else?
No, that's about it. Except he smokes a mild tobacco, heavy on the Latakia. Dad, I gotta get home and finish my book.
Well, I guess I got my money's worth.
It's really very simple. I make it a point to be observant and to pay attention to the details. Good night, Dad.
Son, you forgot your glasses.
From that information, they realize they need to discuss some information regarding this killing with financier and philanthropist Carson McKell. And I love, may I just say before we talk about that, I love that they never go further than he's the financier and philanthropist. They don't say, what does that
and possibly
involve?
Philanderer.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Okay.
And
so,
who is Carson McKell played by?
Oh, the great Ray Milland.
Yes.
I love Ray Milland. He was in a couple years before this, he was in one of my favorite Columbos, The Greenhouse Jungle.
Yeah.
With bullets
in the greenhouse.
Yes, yeah. Oh, it's so good. That's so good. That's one of those great ones where the Columbo, that's a super zing at the end of that, where you're like, the best episodes of Columbo, and Columbo was written by the guys who wrote this episode, who created by the guys who wrote this episode.
Can we talk about the first shot of Ray Milland and how it's...
Oh, yeah, let's do that. Let's hop to that real quick. Let's hop to that. So
you see him behind his desk.
Yeah, Inspector Queen and Sergeant Veeley, who is the
colleague of Inspector. Yes,
the colleague. He's the big tough guy.
He's a big tough guy. He's always chopping on a cigar. Yeah, he wears a hat.
Yeah, yeah. And so you
see... He's a man on the street.
Exactly. You see Carson McKell, and Carson McKell is sitting at a desk in front of a window, and he's backlit with the entirety of New York City behind him. But he's shot in such a way that he looks like a tiny man.
He looks like a kid sitting on a grown-up's
desk. Yes, exactly. Yep. It's like,
and he's not a small man.
No, Ray Milland is not. If you've seen the Bulldog Drummond film he was in back in 1936, you know he's actually a fairly tall.
You think, Ray,
gentleman.
Are you sitting on the floor?
Yes.
Or on a telephone booth? So it's a strange first shot, but
it's really
enjoy
weird.
It'll give you a giggle.
I think I see what they were up to, but I don't know that they.
The choice may have been mistaken.
But sometimes
the choosing went off.
The choosing went goofy. Yeah, it's really weird because when he actually stands up, it's like. It's like, I know Ray Milland from Lost Weekend. I know Ray Milland from Greenhouse Jungle, a lot of other 70s shows when he was older. But I also know him from that first Bulldog Drummond film. Mm-hmm. And in that first Bulldog Drummond film, he's in like a trench coat and he's thin. And he like when he punches someone, you like feel that they've fallen. You know, and like he's, it's like you see him in this shot and it's like, it's kind of an old guy who seems to be about 4 foot tall.
Could you imagine
I represent the lollipop.
Financiers and philanthropists.
Yeah.
Could you imagine a kid behind their parents' desks, but they have the voice of Ray Milland?
I don't know what's happening. Yeah, so he is arrested.
Because we find out that he indeed was a philanderer.
Yes.
That indeed to being murdered, Monica Gray had to suffer the indignity of being banged by Ray Milland.
Oh, boy.
Sorry.
Yeah, so,
I mean, I'm sure he was a lovely fellow in his heyday.
Yeah, so he's taken in, and he's released on bail, and there's a big scene where everyone, the whole family, including...
His lovely
Kim Hunter, who Kim Hunter in one of her less I'm crazy 97 Kim Hunter drives me up the wall in the 70s. No one's ever heard me apart from my dogs talking about her in the Magician TV movie. She drives me up the wall in that. And Bad Ronald, you can understand because she's supposed to be crazy. But this she's calm. She's relatively
she's
calm.
She's really good in it.
Yeah. He's quite good. And so
she's a very forgiving wife.
Yes, very forgiving. And so they all pile in the car, and it's Tom, who's sort of the hothead. It's Monty Markham.
Tom's the hot-headed son.
And Ramon, the chauffeur. Ramon, drive us away from here. Ramon drives them away. And I don't know if Gail, the secretary, is there.
There is no room for her.
Maybe not. But what happens?
The cameraman. And...
What happens then is we go to, is it? Is it 30 Rock? Is it Rockefeller Center? Where is that? The ice skating rink. Yep.
It's Rockefeller Center where the ice skating rink is.
Yes. And so we go to the ice skating rink and everyone's ice skating. It's gorgeous and it's the winter. I didn't think it was the winter from earlier things that happened in the episode, which I cannot tell you about because we're trying not to spoil the ending. But I didn't feel it was winter, but apparently it's winter.
Mm-hmm. Maybe a cool fall day.
Cool fall, maybe like late October or November-ish. And Ellery is there with his niece.
Cousin.
And
Penny.
Penny, yes. And Penny is...
rather precocious.
Precocious. So precocious that we never see her again.
I know.
So that happens. You know, maybe Penny was fun. I think Penny... I don't remember Penny from the book, so she was an addition.
Yeah.
So what happens is...
So she's ice skating. Ellery's reading a book.
Mm-hmm. And basically, oh, I've got some weird notes on my page here.
She's mad at him because he's not spending time with her. You're supposed to be spending time with me, Ellery. And so she tells him the ending of the book that he's reading.
Oh, and
which
that
is, you know, it's like, that's such a penny thing to do.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't, such a
you
penny
don't,
thing
you
to
don't
do.
Do that to one of the main mystery writers of
we're
the
not gonna
20th
do it to
century. You know,
she
it's
shouldn't
like,
have done it to him. But you know, she's a child. We have to cut her a little slack.
It's like if Agatha Christie was reading a John Dixon Carr novel and you said, oh, it was Steve. And Agatha Christie would look at you like, what the F?
You know,
it's like, I've written 50 mystery novels, and you're going to tell me
what
the ending is?
I know exactly what she'd do in that situation.
Punch him in the mouth.
She'd punch you right down there.
she'd punch you downstairs.
She
okay,
would.
All
listen,
right.
She reserves that punch for very special occasions,
people
of which that
novels.
Is one.
So, and Penny points out that the people have been following her.
Yeah, so
and
she's...
Tom, the son... Carson's son, and Gail, the secretary, who is Tom's fiance, basically go up to Ellery and say, I was going to say Hillary, but
Mallory,
and say, Ellery, can you help us? And Ellery says, okay, well, I'll try to see, you know, we don't think our dad did it. And he says, okay, well, I'll try. And he talks to everyone, and Carson says, like, oh, well, I would go out and I'd do this. And, you know, when I go out and see her, you know, I'd put on a hat and a glasses and a mustache, and he'd look like a goofball.
He would wear a disguise to go see his mistress.
Yes, and in the same building.
In the same building.
Because
who would see through that?
Yeah, exactly. So what ends up happening...
I always picture him in one of those Groucho glasses.
Oh, yeah,
and
maybe
hat on.
Like with a big grease paint mustache on, with a big cigar going, how are you doing? I'm Inspector Spaulding.
But I digress. You were about to say.
So what happens is... As things are going bad for Carson, Ellery suddenly realizes something regarding the disguise, because his dad is sending all the cops out with pictures of Carson Bakel, Ray Milland, to all the bars, and
no one recognizes him.
Ho, ho! But Ellery realizes something that could help. And here is the bartender who can help Carson.
Raise your right hand. Do you swear by Almighty God that the testament you're about to give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Be seated.
Would you state your name and occupation, please?
Matthew Thomas Cleary, part owner and bartender of the County Cork Bar and Grill on West 48th Street.
I'd like you to cast your mind back to the night of the murder, the night of the 28th, to be exact.
All right.
Now, Mr. Cleary, would you tell us if one of your customers that night is present here in this courtroom?
Yes, sir.
And would you point him out to us, please?
Sure, right there.
Thank you. No further questions.
Frankly, Mr. Cleary, I just don't see how you can remember. Couldn't it have been another night?
It could have, but it wasn't. How many nights does my granddaughter have a birthday? And besides, I was an hour late getting awake.
But to remember one man after all this time.
I got a charity box on the bar. This fella pays for his drinks with a 20. I give him change, and he shoves over a 10 spot. Put it in the box, he says. Something for the orphans, he says. That makes me remember him, because nobody ever gave me a 10 spot before.
Was the bar crowded?
Always is.
Well, then maybe you didn't notice what time he left.
Sure, I noticed. It was 11 o'clock right on the button.
Mr. Cleary, this astonishing memory of yours.
What's astonishing? Every night at 11 o'clock, I go out to get the papers. We both left together.
No further questions.
He was kind of in his cup, see? So I even got him a cab.
No further questions.
Just trying to be helpful, sir.
All right, so Carson is acquitted. And remember our rule, just because someone is exonerated early on doesn't mean that they're not still a suspect. This is based on an Ellery Queen novel, and these frickin' things were complex, if you've ever read one of them. So keep everything in mind. So
they go to celebrate.
They go to celebrate, and Simon Brimmer reappears and announces that he has some news. And as the family is celebrating with Gail and with Ellery there,
yes,
Ellery turns on the radio and begins to hear the maid, Monica Gray's maid, give out some information. And the information she gives out is something that makes Marion, Carson's wife, Kim Hunter, turn off the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And she says that she went to visit Monica
that
day. She saw the gun. She realized... Dead. Yeah, babe?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, Simon says the police never asked you if Monica had any visitors that day. And Cora said yes, that she did, and that's when Marion turns off... It's Marion, right?
Yes.
She turns off the radio and says, it was I visited her because she was my rival.
Yes, exactly.
And she was the charity something of the apartment building.
Like she did something.
She collected for charity. So anywho, so Cora discloses on Simon Brimmer's radio show that she did see Mrs. McKell.
Mm-hmm. Arrive, and she did see Mrs. McKell see the gun.
That's right.
Because the gun was purchased by Carson for Monica. Because Monica was worried because they were having an affair, and Monica was worried about burglaries that had been occurring.
Yes,
in the building,
mm-hmm.
and. Carson didn't get a gun for his wife because his wife is never alone, although she was actually alone
that evening. What are the odds?
Which, yeah, exactly. So that's kind of, folks, it's, if you've ever read a mystery novel like this, it's so freaking complicated. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to get every point. We're not going to nail down every point.
Can I tell you one thing I really appreciated about that scene? They wheel in the radio to the restaurant, right?
Yes.
To their table, their private room.
They have a private room, yeah.
And I, in my mind, I thought, I bet he just turns it on and it's right on the channel he needs it to be on. It's not. He spends like quite a bit of time to finding the station.
He does.
That was pretty authentic.
Yeah,
It wasn't like you had the push buttons to find things.
Yeah, exactly. Or, yeah, it's like what is it? Angel's Revenge, Crow Radio, where they're driving and they click in the stations. Oh, Crow Radio, Exposition Radio.
I wish I'd timed how long it was, but they spent a little, and I appreciate it.
No, he diddles around with the station to get, because they are in New York, mm-hmm. and Simon is in New York, so the station, the signal should be a good one.
Yes.
So yeah, and Detective Inspector Queen shows up. And
you know what's awful? They have to miss dessert.
Oh, they have to, he arrests Marion. And they roll in dessert.
Oh, it looks so good, too. It's this huge cake with, like, sparklers
so
on it.
Oh, my gosh. So
I feel so bad for those rich people.
I feel so horrible for those wonderfully rich, well-off
financiers and philanthropists.
So I'm
Hi, George.
So, she is released after a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think after Tom, I'm going to speed it up slightly because we've been talking for a while, but I think Tom is implicated, correct?
Yes. Does she get, tell me if I'm right, is this about, do they do the sting operation here?
I think the sting operation is a little later.
Okay.
But I think somewhere around here, I think it's, what happens is, she's released. Monica, mm-hmm. Marion, I'm sorry, is released.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. And so Ellery begins to investigate the burglaries in the building. And they realize that it is a delivery boy from a local pharmacy who is delivering these sleeping pills,
mm-hmm.
and sort of unlocking the doors of these people and breaking into their apartments.
When he knows the sleeping pills have taken full effect.
Yes, yes.
Because we find out that Marion, she was alone all night, and she took a sleeping pill, so she doesn't remember much. Yes.
And the thing that saved her was she says, I heard someone come in. I thought it was Carson, and I said his name, and that was the burglar, and scared the burglar away.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is Gail and Ellery set up a sting operation.
Yeah.
The sleeping pills are given to Gail, and then when the guy shows up, he shows up with a gun, and Ellery and Gail are still wide awake, and they trip him up with like a table, and they begin to talk to him, and they give him some coffee with the sleeping pills in it.
Yes.
And he says what he did.
Mm-hmm.
And what he did exonerates
Marion. Because
yes,
sometimes a burglar can be your friend.
Yes, and it's a really lovely scene where, like, the guy's pointing a gun at Ellery, and Ellery is just, like, waving his hands going, eh, you know, you're not going to shoot me.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to... He's just... It's so great. I mean, it's like... He's one of those great sort of heroes where it's like... He's not quite a hero as you'd imagine a hero to be, but he's so calmly and casually heroic that you just love him. And it's just like...
Casual hero.
Yeah, he's a casual hero.
He's a casual, you know, Friday
it's
hero.
It's like I'm just winning the day by being cool. So what happens then is they have to dive into it again.
Mm-hmm.
And so another person is cleared. And the burglar is cleared. And the mom is cleared. And the dad is cleared. And we go to the son. And the son has been receiving blackmail letters.
The
and
nerve.
So he is arrested. And the blackmail is about, what the heck is a blackmail?
It's about
Monica and...
His dad and Monica.
Yes. And so he's like, yeah, Dad, I knew about that. So Tom is pulled in for that. But Tom is released a little while later.
Mm-hmm.
And what ends up happening is Simon Brimmer gets another tip. At the same time that he gets another tip, Ellery packs his dad in the car and they begin to drive to a location where they know, well, it's anagram related.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, this is a long one, folks, but listen to this.
A new lover. A man who knew about her relationship with Carson McKell and blackmailed him. A man who tried to blackmail Tom McKell. Finally, the man who was in her apartment that night after Tom had gone and shot her to death.
What are you doing?
It's all right, Dad. I know what he's going to say. I should have guessed it months ago.
Guessed what?
And that's a red light!
Sorry. Dad, get a pencil and pad out of the glove compartment. Write down the names of Monica's boyfriends. In 45, Peter Hurt. Just write the last name. And the next is...
It's green.
Who?
The light, it's green.
Oh. In 46, it was Jeffrey Lord, the actor. World famous for playing Hamlet. Put down Hamlet. In 47, Claude, the diplomat.
Claude, got it.
Now, keep in mind that Monica was a very bright lady, a puzzle addict, remember?
Ellery!
She wanted a way to commemorate the man in her life.
Ellery!
So in 1945, she designed a collection of clothes. You remember the drawings, Dad. She called it the Lady Ruth Collection.
Anagrams.
Exactly. Switch around the letters of the word Ruth and you get...
Hurt. Peter Hurt. H-U-R-T equals R-U-T-H.
Right, and the next was...
Lady Thelma. Switch Thelma around and it spells Hamlet. Ellery, that car!
It's all right, he's easy. Finally, there's this year's collection. And what did Monica call it? Lady Dulcea. Dulcea is an anagram for C-L-A-U-D-E, Claude. That's what Brimmer tumbled to. She named her collection after the men in her life.
Stop the car.
No, we're not there yet.
And we won't get there with you driving. Now stop the car and get out. Now get to the point. She used anagrams, but I told you those three men have alibis.
Dad, you're forgetting something. I have a hunch that Claude had already seen his day with Monica. She had somebody new.
Carson McHale.
No, I don't think so. I mean, one of her long-term affairs. She had a new collection on her drawing board. She was working on it when she was killed.
Yeah, a pencil sketch.
Right.
Now, what was it again?
Lady Norma.
I don't believe it. It's
Ramon.
The McHale's chauffeur and Monica Gray's last lover.
So at this point, we're very close to the ending. And one of the things we're going to try not to do is spoil the ending. Because the episodes are joyous, but you want the ending to kick ass. So we're stopping right here. Babe, what did you think of Too Many Suspects, the TV movie?
I think not enough suspects.
Oh my
gosh! I enjoyed it so much I could have had three more suspects. Yeah, no, I love Jim Hutton. I love this series. I really love the relationship between the father and the son.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a lot of fun, isn't it?
It is. It is. I love the brownstone that they live in. It's so sweet. And I love that we don't fully... It looks like they're only on one floor, but surely they must have several.
You see stairs. It's
okay.
A brownstone.
Okay.
They have,
yeah, I would say they must have two or three floors mm-hmm. at least, right? But we're mostly in like the living room area where Ellery writes.
In his study,
or the
maybe.
Kitchen. And we see the hallway where the door is.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a sort of side door where they're... leading to bedrooms and stairs. And the thing is, as we go
Dan's
into this...
Dan's going to construct it completely out of toothpicks.
Oh my gosh. As we go into this series, I love this world they're in. I think the joy of being in 1975, and here's one of the thing about... This is a TV movie thing at this moment rather than a series thing, is that if you know your TV movies from this time... so many things. They went to so many places. And so many genres, so many eras. And just, I love that. And we'll talk about this next time. But there was a previous...
Oh, will we?
There was a previous Ellery Queen, which has an Angel's Revenge link, actually. But there was a previous Ellery Queen movie that came out like 2 years before this, which I'm not up to talking about right now because I haven't researched it. But I know of it. But this was the second time in the first half of the 70s they tried to do an Ellery Queen, tried to boot up an Ellery mm-hmm. Queen series. But you did it at Levinson and Link, who had done Columbo. And of course would do Murder, She Wrote the next decade, but Columbo was one of the hottest shows on television circa this time, and this is so good. I think it's so well written, it's so nicely adapted, it looks so good. I mean, it's so 1947.
Yeah, it was fun in Rockefeller Center, the skating rink. They didn't really have to do much to make it look like 1947.
No, not at all.
Or if they did, I didn't notice it. It was,
and it's so good, and there are so many great character actors and actresses and people who you look at and go, oh my gosh, that person, and oh my gosh, this person. And it's just, and the thing is, it's based on a novel that's very good. So they just have to sort of replicate it. And I think they do.
Hey, Dan, if Monica Gray, if you were her paramour, what do you think she would have called her collection?
Oh, let me think. Daniel.
Or just Dan. It could have been Nad.
Oh, Dan.
Lady
Nad.
Nad.
And
Lady
Anne. The Lady Anne collection.
Maybe she picked her lovers, like, according to their names.
Oh, I was going to say...
Christopher? No, you won't do.
Landiel. No, Landia. No, fuck.
Lady Landy.
I have a horrible anagram name. So, apart from Nad and Anne.
Nad.
Nad.
Lady Dan.
Lady Nad.
Lady Nad.
Oh, boy.
But that collection didn't sell as well as one would expect.
Oh, gosh. 1948 collection went downhill.
Yeah.
So, that's Too Many Suspects, folks. And
it
so,
is.
What we're going to do is we're going to wrap up here. I think we'll do this with all of them. We're going to wrap up. Ellery, since we didn't spoil it, Ellery is going to ask you a few questions, and we'll be back next time. Thanks, folks, for listening.
Thanks. Enjoy.
Do you know who killed Monica Gray? If you've been watching closely, you have all the information you need. You know, for example, it's not the father, because I proved him innocent. Or did I? Maybe it's the mother, or the son, or the faithful secretary, or maybe it's somebody on the sidelines. But don't go too far afield. It's not my father. At least I don't think it is. Well, good luck. Hey, you're probably way ahead of me anyhow.
Hey, Dad. Breakfast?